Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of Ian's Untitled Scene Show. My name is Ian, and once again, I am very excited because I am welcoming back my favorite supergroup. It is Kill the Lights, and this time, it's James Clark. James, how are you doing today?
I am doing phenomenal.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. Now,
life is good. Life is good. I'm in just outside of Minneapolis.
You are? Okay. All right.
We have no snow, which is crazy.
That is, now I guess the question I should ask is that good? Do you actually like that?
It is it's good for me. I mean, again, I do love a little snowboarding and that, but when you have 3 straight months of minus 20 winters, it gets right. A little old. So this has been kind of a little treat.
Yeah. No, that would be pretty good. So I was in the East Coast and now I live in Texas. So for me, this is great because my coldest day so far has been in the 20s or so. Other than that, we'd never have to deal with snow, just ice sometimes.
You were lucky.
I don't take it for granted. I certainly don't. So there is something I wanted to ask right off the bat, because I never got a chance to talk to you, you know, even when you were in Throw the Fight and everything. I noticed the accent. I know you had grown up overseas for a little bit. That's correct, right? Where overseas?
So the accent sounds, it's just a little confused, right? I think so I grew up in my hometown of Peterborough, England, yes. And I moved to the US when I was 18. So I was there my whole life until I came to the US at 18, did a year of high school and then went to college here. So.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Well, how was that transition? Because I did a similar thing. I wasn't in England for that long, but I was over England, Germany, Greece when I was growing up. So it was a little bit of a culture shock, obviously, coming over to the States. Did you feel the same?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I lived with a host family when I came. And, you know, I kind of came with some sports stuff, played soccer.
Nice.
So for me, culture was definitely interesting, just in the sense of I kind of just turned 18 in England, so I was legally able to drink and do all those things.
Right.
Then moved to the US where you can't do that. So for me, I kind of become an adult and then I had to reverse back again and, you know, kind of go through with the American high school experience. So I took a little time to transition, but, you know, there's a lot of wonderful things about the US and I've been here a hot minute now and just, you know, that's where I'm based right now and just love the culture and love the people. So
very nice. And what made you want to stay in Minnesota?
So the interesting thing about it is I had a girlfriend at the time. So I came back initially for the first semester of that.
Ah.
And just as I moved out, we broke up. So that
gotcha.
I got to ruin those plans. But that being said,
sure.
I joined a band, right? And this is in the time of responding to a newspaper ad.
Mm-hmm.
And literally the you know, everything that's happened since was based on the fact that I told myself, if you guys get a decent show before the semester is up and it, something's a good show. So it was a mud opening for Mudvayne was the show,
right.
In fact, on,
yeah.
On the LD50, I think was the album. And then we progressed quickly with like from there getting some national shows and some management. And so literally that was the turning point of like whether I go back to England and go back to college there or if I stay in the US and
gotcha.
You know, here I am. So it was kind of crazy because it was literally down to that pivotal point.
Yeah. See, I did not know that backstory because I think a lot of people know Kill the Lights is a super group. That's what I said in the beginning. And I truly believe that. I guess one of the questions too is, do you like that term? Is that something you're used to now?
Well, there's a couple ways to look at that, right? It sets a great expectation if you have what's called a super group.
Yes.
You know, the band's got to be good or should be good, right? And there's, I think, plenty of super groups where the music just, they've got a lot of individuals, but it overall doesn't fly. But for me, it's like, I think at this point, getting into the album two, I think we're at the stage now where people have heard of Kill the Lights.
Yeah.
Kind of created our own sound, and I think it's enough to kind of start getting away from that. Now, that being said, you know, having guys and bands of kind of, you know, kind of founders or pioneers, you know, early on metalcore and some big bands, you know, it's like they need props too, right? I mean, that the reason that for part of the scene happening is because of those guys in my band. So I'm like kind of the I'm kind of like the probably the most unknown guy in the band. You know what I mean? So I'm referred to as et cetera mostly. Superfruit featuring et cetera, James Clark, et cetera, is what I've been fondly referred to as. But no, like I said, it does set a high expectation. But I think, you know, coming into this new album, we should, and I hope that the fans kind of can hear the influence, but also hear the Kill the Lights have kind of created their own niche and their own sound, and the band can kind of carry its own weight.
Yeah.
That would be my hope.
No, absolutely. I really do think it does. I mean, so you mentioned the new album, it's Death Melodies. We're recording this a little bit earlier, but it's going to be out on March 8th through Fearless Records. So we're going to get into the album for sure. But I think that's really interesting, the way that you look at that, because to me, I would say I grew up more on your music, I would say, than anyone else in the band besides Bullet for My Valentine. But since you played Warped Tour, since you were more on the, let's say, post-hardcore alternative rock side, maybe, with Throw the Fight, I know your music a lot more than, at the time anyways, I knew your music more than other people in the band. So
well,
it's funny.
That's why I appreciate you. You see
and I'm just sucking up, obviously. But no, I have always enjoyed what you've done, and I think it's really interesting now because previously in 2020, when The Sinner came out, I had Travis on, and we talked about Threat Signal, how the band got started, you know, how he fit into everything, and now there's been a huge change, not only with the new album Death Melodies, but also with the lineup itself. So you have your original four during The Sinner, but then also Jay from Bullet for My Valentine also joined the band. And it seems like he's really rounded out that sound. And one of the big things that I noticed was you were doing, and you still do, the screaming and the singing. But now with Jay in the band, you see parts or you hear parts that are specifically him when it comes to the screaming. So what has that been like for you being in the band at the beginning? And then now, are you alleviated a little bit that you don't have to do like everything that you're doing for The Sinner?
Yeah. I mean, Jay has got such a distinctive scream, right? You can tell, you know whose scream that is, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's finding that balance of incorporating a guy that's got a very well-known scream and making that still sound like it's Kill the Lights. So if you listen to the record, you know, it's a mix of stuff. It live helps me a ton. He can carry some of that weight, where on the first album, I was going to do both parts throughout the whole thing.
Exactly.
Which, you know, so for live purposes is much better for me now. And it allows me the space to be able to do some scream sections when I want to do the scream sections. But I mean, great. Jay can go for days screaming. He just, his voice just handles it so well. So like I say, I was just finding that balance of places where we can fit that, his voice in. And I feel like it's been a really, really nice add, not only as him as a person, but a really nice add to have his feedback and kind of insight and, you know, just overall perspective, you know, with his experience with Moose too, just them collectively, his musicians are very tight too. So yeah, he brings a lot to the band, you know, and it was always conversations early on in the band that it just probably wasn't the right time, but I'm glad that it did become the right time for him to join. So
now, would you say with The Sinner, obviously it came out during COVID, so that was a big deal when it came to touring, when it came to getting together. You mentioned you're in Minnesota. Obviously, some of the guys are overseas. I think Travis is in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep,
so he's relatively
correct,
close to where I am. But in general, you kind of dealt with the Zoom thing or the meeting. And then I know you guys flew over there to do some of the recording. Now, with the band more full, you know, with Jay in it, did you also, I don't know the background of how you did Death Melodies. Did you go overseas to do that as well? Or did people come here this time?
Yeah, so we went over to the UK and did a lot of the stuff there. Pretty much everything was done in the UK, and then partial vocals here. Chris Clancy, who co-produced and engineered the album, flew to Minneapolis, and so we did some sessions here with Ian Combs as well. But like a large part was at Andy Sneap's studio, who is Sneap, is a was in Judas Priest and produced Judas Priest. He has an absolutely beautiful studio in Derbyshire, you know, right. Quick walk down to the pub, but just beautiful setting, and you know, just spending time there doing that and getting a chance to kind of just immerse ourselves in the music was a huge thing for us, I think. And you know, part of why I feel this record probably feels more rounded and more complete is probably just the ability we had to get it together to work on it and record it, you know. So
how long would you say you were there for everything that you had to do besides the sessions back in Minnesota?
Yeah, so about 2-3 weeks for that. Now, we had everything pre-produced. We had about 24 songs that were demoed out already, right? And then so by the time we got to the studio, everything was pretty much dialed in. There was I believe it's From Ashes was the one of the singles that's been released.
Yes.
That tune was a completely different song going into it. I think we only kept the pre-chorus and chorus. So it was completely rewritten and totally different song. So that's kind of the wonders of going into the studio and the magic that happens in there and your ability to kind of switch stuff on the fly. So I always loved that piece of it and the creative side to that. But you know, we'd been kind of sitting on tunes, you know, with COVID going on and you know, writing sessions. So we flew out to Windsor in Canada, and the US boys went across the border, and the UK boys met us there. That was kind of crazy trying to figure out how to write together. And Jay and Travis flew out one time to write with me as well. So we had a real mix of writing sessions to kind of get to this, which is probably just a different dynamics and different songs working together, and us as a kind of coming together more as a team to be able to do some writing.
What would you say is your favorite style of writing? Because if you go from, you know, Throw the Fight to what you did with The Sinner to now with Death Melodies, do you have a favorite way? The question is, did something click? Did something work better for you than it has in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Interestingly, you know, certain tracks, you know, me and Trav just wrote a couple of tracks, and then you know, it's initially, and then the guys all kind of rounded it out with their pieces, and then at the same time, George did a couple of moves. So like, I think it's been kind of but you know, collectively there was like at least half, 3/4 of the record was written together. So it just allowed us to each have a really equal share in writing, which is really cool for change too. It's not anybody really driving, you know, over one over the other, you know, every kind of contributed pretty even, an even amount of ideas. So it was really nice to have, and that's why I feel on this record, I think it's now possibly defined the kind of overall sound of what Kill the Lights is, and The Sinner was kind of us just somewhat figuring that out, you know?
What would you say? I mean, I guess when I listen to The Sinner and then I listen to Death Melodies, because I've been able to go through it a lot. So when I compare them, I definitely hear parts of The Sinner in Death Melodies, but like you mentioned, the rounded out sound is there. And I think you've really hit that where it's metalcore or metal melodic metalcore with that alternative rock feel to it as well. Like, I think some of these tracks could easily be, if there was rock radio left, there would easily be tracks in here that would be on rock radio. But then they've also got that newish metalcore tinge to them as well, where I think this really does, or Death Melodies in general and the band, I think can bridge the gap between people that really love old school metal and people that also like the more metalcore sound, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you know, this record, and even on the first record, we had tunes that were balladish, radio-ish, also like super heavy, right?
Right.
And I think what we always said to ourselves, right, and like, let's not feel like we have to write a certain song over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just be creative and allow it to come out. If it works, it works. If it fits the flow of the record, you know, we kind of wanted it to be a bit of a roller coaster, right? And and you know, Death Melodies started off, the title started off as a demo song title, and I'm suggested to the guys, I'm like, this could be really a cool concept if we think about what the lyrical content is and it's the flow of the overall album.
Yeah,
I mean, we sat in Wales Cardiff, listening over the tracks, trying to place them in the correct spaces. Mm-hmm. And there was four or five other tracks that could have easily fit on the record too, but we wanted it to be like an album that you can start at track one and listen all the way through to 12 and not skip seven tracks, you know? And I feel like it gives you, the flow is there, right? It's a bit of a a journey. And, you know, for me, lyrically, is around, there's a lot of emotional pieces tied to anxiety and depression and relational stuff with family. And, you know, so a lot of that's the kind of, it to me, is the vision of it is the ups and downs of life and your journey of life and all the hard things we all, no matter where you're from, your age, you know, your background, we all endure and go through a lot of these struggles. So I feel like this record kind of encapsulates all those emotions, and it kind of says like, hey, we can go from a thrash tune to a ballad tune to a whatever you want to, you know, metalcore track, and it still feels like Kill the Lights, and it still feels like the same band, you know?
Yeah. No, I think you said it really, really well there. And I have to definitely compliment your vocal range and what you do in Death Melodies as well. There are times where you hear very similar music over and over again, you know, especially in the scene. There are lots of metalcore bands that sound very similar to other metalcore bands. And that's not necessarily a bad thing all the time, especially if they're doing it right. You know, if the music sounds good, the music sounds good. But there are times where when you're listening to some of these tracks, you go, oh, you know, James could have gone in this direction, but he didn't. And you made it your own with the key that you went with or the tone that you went with. And that's why I've always liked how dynamic your vocals can be. Besides just going from screaming to singing and back and forth, there's also something different about how you're able to vocalize. Maybe it's coming from more of a post-hardcore, you know, alt-rock background to be in this type of band. Do you see that as a strength of yours? Or I don't even know if you agree with how I'm explaining this or not.
No, totally. I probably have, you know, and it even comes down to my average daily listening, right? I'm kind of, you know, I'll go from like old school punk to metalcore to some throwback country somehow, you know, sure. Like, and, you know, again, to indie stuff, to 90s grunge, you know, like, so I'm kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
In the sense of, I just reflective of mood, I just kind of follow where my head's at, you know? And so probably sometimes when I listen to tracks and hear things, maybe I'm kind of coming at it from a slightly different viewpoint. You know what I mean? Which maybe is that, you know, and on this record, I try to, you know, I've always wanted to experiment a little bit more with more falsetto and some of those things, right? That, you know, even like Sleep with the Devil, which is more of a ballady tune, but like the outro on that track is a, you know, feels somewhat gospel, full choir, five-part harmony piece that, you know, and we tried it and it's like, you know what? Screw it. Like we shouldn't shy away from doing that. You know, like, why not?
Right.
If it works for the track, do it. Like, so I feel like we were honest with ourselves and we're honest with our taste in music and what we felt for it. And I think fans kind of identify and they see through bullshit, right? When you're phoning it in or rewriting the same thing or trying to be somebody, you know, I feel like we are very much, you know, guys that have kind of been through, a lot of touring and a lot of albums and, this for many years and we can really sit down and write and enjoy writing, you know, and enjoy it for the pure love of music, which is pretty sweet.
Would you say that stigma and that stress is kind of off you, especially with the sophomore album? Would you say that because you feel like veterans in the scene, that kind of, I guess, negative feedback or whatever you want to call it, doesn't really get to you? It kind of rolls off your back now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, when we talk about like how that first album hit and the expectation, the run up to that, and then you having the first pandemic in 100 years, you know, for me, it was like, it was all hyping up to be, you know, kind of the pinnacle of where I've worked towards. And it was a, you know, a huge letdown to not be able to tour and do all the things that surrounded the record, you know? So we kind of feel like we haven't had the chance to really do it yet in this band, you know what I mean? Okay. Really push it. So for us, you know, I feel a lot of bands, the sophomore record tends to slump a little bit. You know, they spend 10 years writing the first record and the second record is somewhat lackluster, you know, and it's, I feel we've done a great job in this one to up the game again, I think, you know, I'm excited where it's going, you know, that we continue to kind of just, you know, stretch the boundaries of the types of, you know, types of songs we're writing, but keep the fans happy still, you know? So,
yeah, I think one of the interesting to kind of go off of what you were just mentioning, I think if I'm not mistaken, as of right now recording, I think you put out, how many, is it 5 tracks off the new album?
Yep, 5 singles, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So those singles, though, have been monsters, at least from what I've seen, of the amount of people that are listening to them, that are, you know, people that are excited to hear the full album themselves. Has there been any specific piece of feedback you've taken from those? Because basically, you know, there's 12 tracks on Death Melodies. There is no filler. It's front to back. So when you release almost half of them already, you're kind of getting an idea of what that feedback is going to be. So has there been anything that has really stuck with you?
I mean, to me, if I take the record as a whole, my 4 favorite songs are not any of the tracks that have been released so far.
So that's great.
And I think the interesting thing is, if you asked each of the guys in the band what their top 3 or 4 tunes are, everybody has a different one, which is super interesting too. So I felt like you're onto something. If that's, when that happens, generally it's a good thing, right? Because it means you got some good songs on there.
Oh yeah.
So for me, you know, having 2 or 3 tunes, you know, kind of 2 radio-ish, 2 heavy-ish, and then 1 ballady thing.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I feel the overall record's reflective of this is a bit heavier than what's probably represented right now. And the singles, for the reason they're a single, right? So I think people are going to be like, oh, okay, there's the bangers as well, right? Like, there's plenty more legs to come to really show the kind of true metal fan that we're kind of pushing the boundaries on that too. So I'm really excited for everybody to hear the full record and you know, to get that the real true rounded experience of what the record is, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about the album, was going front to back and being able to do that multiple times, whether I'm in my car, I'm at the gym, or I'm hanging out, whatever it happens to be. There are so many different variations of what you're doing with, you know, the ballad tracks, as you mentioned. You know, you've got your metalcore, you've got your radio, you've got your alternative, you've got that straight up metal. There are so many different variations, and a thrash. I mean, there's so many tracks that it is fun for people to be able to listen. At least I had fun, you know, listening for what you were doing, listening for what Jay was doing. Obviously, very heavy on guitar work, bass, and drums. I mean, that's basic of most bands. But what I have enjoyed about Kill the Lights, which is kind of old school, is being driven by such talented guitarists. There aren't that many areas where you're lagging at all. You've always got tempo, and you've always got something interesting coming in with the guitar work that's leading and driving everything else. I enjoy that a lot, and I think people are going to enjoy going front to back as well, because like you said, there are some of those slow tracks, there are some of those sped up, you know, there's some that really get you thrashing, but it can be listened to in a lot of different ways. And I think that's really interesting to think that there were 12 tracks that you had to just demo out that didn't work for the album. So how did you know that these were the 12? Like, what was the deciding factor that made those ones have to wait? Will you think you'll use those again at some point?
You know, some of them may get reimagined somehow.
Okay.
And then maybe tunes that get released on a deluxe version too, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got that potential down the line.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So for us, it was more about, you know, the big picture and the flow of it. You know, does, you know, so sitting down and go, oh, I do a couple of these, are they kind of alike, and which is a strong, what, which feels like the strongest one of these three? And, you know, do we have, you know, so kind of figuring out the flow of the record. And like I said, we sat for a day straight, listened through and through, and reshuffling it on the laptop of the order and sequence and everything else too. So some songs didn't just, not that they weren't great, they just didn't fit the mold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a nice, it's a beautiful space to be in when you can do that. Now, again, you know, I think, again, speak to a couple of guys and they would, you know, a couple of us may say that there was other tracks that could have made it for sure. But that's, again, a good problem, right? It's not, there's no fluff, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think you're in the exact space that you want to be. So I want to go back a little bit when we talk about your vocals. and what you did for Death Melodies, what you did for The Sinner. Since I mentioned how you come from, you know, it's a similar background, but it is different when you look at, you know, Threat Signal and you look at Still Remains, you look at, you know, Bullet for My Valentine, stuff like that. You know, Throw the Fight was significantly different when it came to vocals. So when you're offered this position and you come into the band, what did you do with your vocals that made it work for you? Because this is so different. Is it something that you always wanted to do? Were these more metal vocals? Is that what appealed to you?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved thrash, you know, thrash in general, right? In that genre. And I've always wanted to be in a heavier band, right?
Okay.
But a heavy band that has the ability to kind of provide kind of melody too,
yes,
right?
So
I think it took, you know, The Faceless was the tune. The Faceless was the track that Jordan and Moose sent me, and that's my first demo, and it remained pretty much exactly the same as my audition, that track.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
And when I heard that track, that's kind of the, you know, I think I had a bit of a vision of what I felt, you know, they were going for, you know, and it's kind of taking some of that thrash kind of vibe, taking kind of that feeling, some of that Pantera kind of influence, you know, Phil Anselmo, you know, and then just slicing in that melody, and even taking some like Maiden, you know, influence, and just some of those really, you know, throwbacky bands too. But then, yeah, you know, looking to kind of transition and then bring in, like, how do we bring in a more of a modern sound with that? How do you recreate a, you know, metalcore slash thrash slash modern sound and blend those pieces together? So it's been some navigating, and I you know, there's demos, plenty of demos around that didn't work as well, right? Like, you listen to some Linkin Park kind of stories, right? And I don't know, on a couple of their records, they had 100, 120 songs,
right?
In the bank before they chose 12. So it takes time and dedication and energy to get it right and rewrite it. And, you know, for me, I'll often sit down with a track and listen to it probably 30 or 40 or 50 times, and I'll play it over and over again to start getting the idea or melody, you know, and then I'll come back with lyrics. So other times I'll write it in about 10 minutes and it's done. It's okay. Crazy. But for the most part, I put a lot of time and energy into figuring out the vocal and melody, you know, and then back in studio reviewing the lyrics again too, because it's easy to get kind of trapped in using the same themes all the time, or the same lyrics specific, or the same word, you know. So in this instance, we went through and we had to cross out four or five words I couldn't continue to use, which is interesting too. But that's just, you know, that's the kind of detail we wanted to go into, so we're not writing the same track or not talking about the same thing all the time,
right? Yeah. And by the way, I do have to mention, that's one thing I want to mention, I didn't know if it would come up or not, but when you talk about certain words that you stopped using or you didn't want to use, I noticed one of the, I would say, cliches that I hear a lot in the scene is Dead Inside.
Okay.
And you use that, but you did it in a way where that wasn't the focal point of the song itself. And I really appreciated that, because I think a lot of bands, if you just look up that lyric, you hear a lot of bands really use that as a crutch, because it always sounds cool, right? You're talking about, about depression or mental health or something like that, you talk about being dead inside. But I like the way that you used it in the track, where you didn't rely on it too heavily. But that is definitely one that I point out all the time. Or maybe it's just me. Maybe it's a stigma now that I hear it or I pinpoint it, just because I've heard it so many times.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, we grab the dictionary out right now and just trying to find words that match that and suit that. It's there's not always great options.
It's difficult,
but like I say, I'm conscious of that, right? We go to great lengths to try not do that.
Yeah,
but there's also times where you go, you know what, fuck it, that's it. So there were times on that where, you know, I'd sit down with Chris Clancy and you'd be like, dude, we can't use that. I'm like, you know what? I am going to say on this one, we are going to use that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to stick with it. But other times, I'm like, you know what? You're right. Let's rethink that line. So, yeah.
Yeah. That makes total sense. So when you mentioned, like, listening 30, 40, 50 times, however many you need to make sure you get that melody right, whatever it happens to be in that case. Are you one of those people that can listen to their music after you're done? Like, have you been listening to death melodies? Or once you're done with something, you're done with it?
It's kind of funny because it's like, I will go, you know, we've been done with it for a minute now, and I'll go a month without listening to it. Now, obviously, we've just announced a European tour, so now I'm going to, you know, practicing pretty heavy for that. So I'll have to, like, immerse myself in it. But traditionally, you know, it's like, you know, I'm first listening again, I'll be like, holy shit, you know, God, that feels good. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's really nice to kind of get back into it. But I'm not a guy that listens to his own music. No, not traditionally. You know what I mean? Like, the answer is no.
No, I totally get it. I always think that's funny because there are certain, like I said, been doing this for, you know, 15 years or so. There are so many bands that say the exact same thing. And then there's another percentage that love listening to their music, but they say, why would I make music that I'm not going to listen to myself?
Yeah.
But it's funny how it works both ways, depending on how you're feeling at that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I'm super proud of what I've done.
And you should be. Yeah.
I love it. I just, you know, it's like when you spend so much time working in and on it and then recording it and doing, I've been working with this stuff for 2 years now, you know, so it's not fresh at this point. But again, you know, as I get back into it, it's just first listen through is awesome. But I live with it constantly, you know, so it's, you know, like I said, I love what I do. I love playing it. I love performing it live. But if I'm putting, you know, I'm not going to self-glorify myself and my own ego by listening to me all day. That's not, nobody needs that.
Well, that's what I'm here for. So I totally get it. So you mentioned the European tour. Now, I don't remember this. I could be wrong about this. Have you not all played together live yet because of COVID?
No, we have. We did Monuments Tour.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Played Download. We did a bunch of different stuff. Yep.
Was Jay in the band at the time?
Jay did Download with us and Monuments. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So you know how you're going to work. I would assume. So I never got to see that. I would assume that Jay is helping in certain areas of tracks from the Sinner. Would I be correct in that?
Yeah. So we did the Bleed From Within tour as well. Those guys, Scott and the boys in Bleed Within, Scottish guys, awesome guys.
Yeah. Too.
They just announced that they're obviously doing the arena tour with Slipknot.
And
just again, their body works, they come out some great stuff. So I'm just, like, super proud of those guys. You know, they've been grinding for years and then now finally getting some recognition. So it's wonderful that they get a chance to do that too. But Jay got to kind of partake and support me on the Sinner record too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he picks up a lot of the screen parts on that too. Which is awesome.
Yeah. There shouldn't be any issues then when you're singing death melodies and everything. You guys kind of have what's going to work best live. I mean, you still have a little bit of time left, obviously, to practice because I believe the European tour is, what is it, mid-April to May?
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, we you know, right now we each go away. We practice for weeks on end on our own.
Yeah,
come together a week before the tour and iron everything out. You know, so feeling pretty good about it. Just, you know, we don't have a conventional scenario. We can have band practice 2 days a week. So
right.
That does present, you know, makes it a lot harder for all of us. But again, you know, I'm playing with guys that have done this for 15, 20 years. So
exactly,
pretty easy.
Wait, is it more? Do you guys get together via Zoom? Via Discord? Is it one of those things where right now you guys are in kind of the marketing advertising phase of everything, getting ready for the actual release?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's we're doing a lot of press for it. Yeah. It's wonderful. And we're super happy and proud that people want to hear the story and discuss the content. And you know, for us, it's super cool just to hear the feedback too, right?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it's great, and other people have different opinions too, which is awesome. Well, that's what music's about, right? You're not all supposed to feel the same thing.
Very true.
So, you know, we appreciate any and all feedback. So it's, like I said, it's fun and rewarding to have conversations with people like yourself that kind of love music and love the experience and really sit down and give it a good listen. You know, like some of my favorite memories are going to the record store and picking up a CD and reading the inlay, right? Who produced it and who are they thanking? What bands are they thanking? And like that was just a whole experience. And like I said, I think it's become a bit of a singles market now, right?
True.
So, but that being said, you know, obviously we've got vinyl coming out too, which is super cool.
Yep.
You know, all those kind of things. So we're excited about that and to have the physical copies too, and you know, people to experience it.
I would say, so you mentioned going to the record store, you know, being able to read that inlay and everything. I'm a big fan of getting an album and going through the lyrics, right? I want to know, you know, if there's something I'm missing or if there's something that I have a chance to read through, like especially like a concept album, stuff like that. But you bring up kind of being in the past a little bit when we talk about Throw the Fight. Blah, wow, I cannot. I'm sorry, James.
Okay, tongue twisters, man.
This is what I do. So it's one of those things where you talk about, you know, growing up with a band and the change in social media and the way people are able, obviously, to actually engage with artists and listen to music. So when you were putting out albums before, there wasn't as much social media as there is now. So when you mention people that, you know, maybe don't agree that the album is great or something like that, does that wear on you? Or is it one of those things where it was never a thing that you really had to deal with as much in the past, so it doesn't bother you now?
I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Mm-hmm. So the kind of social media itself, the evolution of social media and the impact it can have on bands as a whole can be huge, right? And bands blow up through TikTok, through, you know, Instagram right now, Reels, whatever else too, you know? Sure. So it's given bands that would have never, ever gotten a chance before this exposure, which is phenomenal and wonderful, right?
Yeah.
The flip side to that is, you know, to go back to the original kind of format for bands and selling records and the whole process, you know, bands as a whole were making a lot of money, a ton of money, you know, the old adage of the rock star money was a thing back then.
Yes,
when the Bullet right. guys were doing it, you know, when they started, that they sold a million records, you know, that's not happening now, you know? So I think it's too, you know, I think there was less opportunity for more people back then, but those that got the opportunity could do very well with it. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, it's like there's such an open platform for people to be able to share content and get out and get exposure, which is absolutely wonderful too. But there seems to be thousands of bands now, you know what I mean? That's
right.
Just an overwhelming amount of bands too, you know, everybody's a band. So I think it's a combination of both, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So when you talk about, you know, going overseas for this tour and the different styles of music and so many different bands that are out there, who do you see Kill the Lights touring with? Because it does seem like you hit a lot of different areas. So I can see you touring with a lot of different styles of bands. But do you guys have a vision of the kind of tour package that you'd want to put together, especially when it comes to touring in the States at some point?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, for us, it could go anywhere from, I mean, Lamb of God to Killswitch Engage to I Prevail to Bad Omens to, I think we, you know, we have the spread that we could kind of, you know, cover that. You know, I think
Agreed.
We have the ability to go with bands that have got more of an active rock format, but we've got enough tunes that we could hang with some super heavy bands too.
Right.
So I wouldn't be afraid of any of it. I think for us, we have the ability to be able to cross some genres, which gets your exposure to more people too, which is great and builds that fan base. So I guess question to you then, who would you like to see as well? I mean, would you have a dream package? What would you envision?
I really liked when you mentioned Killswitch Engage. I can certainly see that type of getting together. I also see what I've enjoyed a lot recently, and I'm not sure how often you get to go to shows and enjoy this type of thing too, but I love a full metal tour package. I love that. I mean, a metal fest, something like that, I'm a big fan of that. But I'm also a fan of when you have different bands in the scene. So for instance, I just had a band on the show recently that would be considered like goth emo core, screamo, post-hardcore, that kind of thing. You guys would fit in with that band as well because you're in the same genres of the scene, but you might not have people going to the same show every time. So I think each of you would actually get new fans.
Yeah.
Maybe because I've been in the music industry for so long as well, I think about it as, how can you both or multiple bands get more people that are going to check out your music? Where I think when it comes to some of the rock or metal bands now touring with a pop band or a rap act or something like that, there may be a little bit of crossover, but I think in a lot of cases, it's the scene people crossing over to the pop or the rap and not necessarily vice versa. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a fine line on that, right? It would happen way more if it made financial sense for a rap artist to tour with a metal artist. It just, it's ticket sales at the end of the day too, right? So a lot of bands would probably like to tour with each other, but at the end of the day, you got bills to pay. So part of it's that, but you know, like I do feel like we could cover the spread pretty diversely on who and what we could tour with, you know?
I totally agree with that.
Which is exciting, you know, like that's why it gives us the opportunity to have, you know, supporting bands for the upcoming tour and different bands that cover the spread too, you know? So
do you think, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, especially with the way you're speaking, and I know some of the other people in the band and everything with what their personalities are like, but obviously being still a new band, even though you're all veterans and you're all veterans of the music scene of so many different albums that you guys have put out collectively, but do you feel any stigma about opening for a big band? Like, so we all know Bad Omens is huge. You know, Falling in Reverse is huge. There are certain bands in the scene that are at a higher echelon than others that maybe haven't even been around for that long, but that's how the market dictates things. Would you still feel comfortable being an opener or a middle act for those types of bands?
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing you kind of learn about us, we don't give a shit about who and what we open for, right? If you had ask the same question to any of the guys in the band, we're more than willing to just get in front of people no matter what that is. So,
right.
I mean, when we opened, you know, last couple tours, we were supporting, right?
Right.
Opening.
Yep.
So, you know, and some of those bands grew up on some of the guys in my band's music, right?
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
but there's no ego there, you know, like, you know.
That's awesome.
You had Moose and John here right now, but like, put us in a row. We don't care. It's like, you speak to our European agent. He'll, because he had this open conversation with us. Is this something you're not willing to do? And we're like, no.
That's what I figured. Yeah. That's why I want to check. I appreciate that. And I figured something like that would come up at some point. But I guess that's also a question for you as well. Are you looking to be on the road for a significant period of the year? Because as you know, touring costs have gone through the roof. You're going to Europe for a month, month and a half or so. But are you yourself, based on where your life is right now, are you looking to be on the road, let's say 300 days a year, somewhere around there? Is that what you want to do?
No, I don't think any of us are going to be on the road for 300 days a year, and I don't think it makes sense to do that kind of mentally and physically, you know.
Sure.
We're, you know, most of us are married with kids and
yes, right,
kind of that work-life balance piece too, but it is very much a full-time occupation and very much a full-time gig, and the plan is to tour plenty with it, right? So where some bands do want to grind and just go be home for a week and be gone for 2 months and home for a week, that isn't our plan, but
okay.
Our plan is to tour full time and quite frequently. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's always having that fine, you know, many bands burn out way too quickly, right?
For
so
sure.
They burn out too quickly because they're trying to do too much and they just don't have that balance. And I think work-life balance is how you maintain your creativity, how you maintain friendships as a band and mental health as well, how you maintain that. So
yeah. Is it a little bit... Sorry, I chuckled myself thinking about this, but is it a little bit better in some ways that you guys are all spread pretty much across countries? Does that work actually better for the band still remaining friends and being excited to get back together, you know, going on this European tour? Does that actually help with that?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
I mean, we're all friends anyway, you know, but like kind of getting back to like size of shows, you know, like the last few shows Moose and Jay were doing with Bullet, with arena shows, right?
Sure.
We're playing 200, 300, 400 cap rooms, but I was having a great text conversation with Moose the other day about how excited we are to be playing these sweaty, small, intimate venues.
Right.
And like, gosh, maybe you feel the same, but some of the best shows I've ever seen are those packed houses with just 150, 200 people. Like, sure. they've always been my favorite shows, and some of these venues are playing on this tour mm-hmm. are exactly that.
Oh,
and
I'm like, cool.
We're just super excited for it, to be honest.
Yeah. Know? No, that's really awesome. And I appreciate that in the bands that are playing them, because obviously, like we talked about before, I want you to get money. I want you guys to do well. And sometimes that doesn't happen when you play in smaller venues, but there is nothing taking away. If you pack out one of those small venues, you're absolutely right. Some of the best experiences I've had going to live shows, like I saw My Chemical Romance before they were popular in a small venue in Boston. And I'll never want that to go away. Like, I'll never want to forget that memory. Yeah, they're going to kill it in an arena. They're going to kill it at, you know, When We Were Young, all that kind of stuff. But seeing them in that small venue being that hungry, how do you get over that?
Exactly. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I saw Godsmack. Now, again, totally different genre.
Oh, sure.
You know, active format, you know?
Yeah.
But I saw them in at a show at the 400 Bar in Minneapolis with 45 people at it.
Nice.
40 people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and nobody knew where they were at the time. So
that's very cool.
I think, you know, again, it's just, it comes back to like, bands are out there right now doing that same thing that 2 years from now will be a big band. And mm-hmm. there's so much talent out there, right? And so many albums that just haven't been as big as they should be, right? It is a, you know, it's a shit shoot as to how, if an album's going to go or not, and the timing on it and everything that comes with it. So there's only so many bands that get that actual, the actual, you know, the 1% of bands get the actual real go at it,
yeah.
You know? So we're just lucky to be able to be given opportunities to tour and get opportunities to work together and to have a label. Fearless has been amazingly supportive of us from day one.
Right.
They've not asked us to write in any specific way or do anything other than what we want to do. We've kind of dictated with them and had plenty of conference calls as to how we want to do things. And it's pretty exciting to be with a label that's willing to support you that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fearless seems like they've got their act together when it comes to, especially having a wide range of different sounding bands, including Kill the Lights, obviously. So Death Melodies is coming out on March 8th through Fearless Records. We talked about the tour. We talked about the album. You know, what your vocals were like and everything. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about specifically, anything that I missed about the album that you wanted to really hit home with audiences before we go into some random things and before we close out for tonight?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's about, for me, it's about being transparent. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, right? I can talk about my mental health on a podcast and I can talk about it in lyrics, but sometimes struggle to ask for help when I need it. But for me, a lot of this is around anxiety and depression, mm-hmm. some of those things. And as an artist, you know, the battles and the battle of life, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
We all go through hardships. And for me, it's just sharing, you know, I'm trying to be as proactive a voice to people that maybe are going through some of these problems right now. And just to say that, you know, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to reach out and ask for help,
right?
Stranger or somebody that you know and love or trust. Right. So I think it's important to always, there's always somebody willing to listen. And the biggest failure in the world is when people don't feel like they have somebody they can talk to or reach out to. So, you know, a lot of my struggles is reflected through the record here and even with the center too. But I think if people learn anything from this, and my hope is that you know, maybe there's 10 kids out there right now that are going through a battle, and if what I'm helping helps these kids have a conversation or reach out for help, like, my job's done.
Right. One of the reasons why I love this style of music, one of the reasons why I haven't changed the type of music that I listen to and I love, is when I hear tracks like this in Death Melodies and I hear these styles of lyrics and what you're writing and the passion that I hear in what you're doing, it makes me feel better. Even knowing that I'm going through some of the same or similar things, even though that might be depressing and it's talking about mental health and all of that, it makes me feel better. Not knowing necessarily that someone else is going through it, but there's something about the expression of it. And maybe it's because I can't express it as well as I want to. It makes me feel better knowing that someone else is expressing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think we, you know, we're all, you know, a lot of us feel kind of disenfranchised or feel like we don't fit in or feel like the world doesn't understand us, you know? And I think that's kind of some of the angst that, you know, in these genres of music, the reason these styles of music are created is for an outlet for that, you know?
Right.
So the reason I got into, you know, hardcore music and punk as a kid, the rebellious piece to it, to not wanting to agree or have to feel like you have to conform to everything, you know? So it is our outlet, you know? And the reason I still love and do this is because it is an adrenaline rush to do it, you know? And at the end of the day, the message is also a message of, you know, light too, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, having faith in, you know, yourself and the people around you and faith in general, and just, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. That is the message too, though.
Right.
That you know, we endure and we get through. So.
Yeah. No, and like I said, I love that. I'm a big fan of, even if something comes up or off as depressing or whatever, or dark or anything like that, that there is that light there. There is that hope. There is something more to what is being said. And that's what keeps me listening to this style of music. That's what hits me. And I know people who listen to this show, it's the same for them as well. So they love hearing the passion behind what you're doing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me switch gears. You know, it's always funny after, you know, doing some real stuff and then asking this. Before we wrap things up, I latched onto something that you mentioned. You know, I had talked about or asked about you growing up overseas. You had mentioned soccer. And I am a huge soccer fan, and I wait till the end to ask this question to people that actually know soccer. But are you a fan of any Premier League team at all?
So growing up, you as a kid, you tend to have a Premier League team you follow, right? So it would have been Liverpool at the time, you know, would have been my team. Now, I grew up in the 80s too, and so Liverpool, that was that prime at that time, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, if kids these days now might, the high chance are a Man City fan or Chelsea fan or whatever else too. You a Man United fan, or what's your...
When you said Liverpool, my heart blew up, because that is what I've been since I was 3 years old.
Yeah, so my hometown is Peterborough United, so that
right,
would be...
Right.
So two divisions below. So if you ask who I support, it would be Peterborough United.
Sure.
Not so much of a Liverpool fan anymore, but obviously I watch Premier League. I watch that every, you know, the best part is my cousin was just in town from England, and he was so annoyed because we can literally watch every game here and he can't get it in England.
That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm completely fine with it. So, you know, I'm up at 6 watching games a lot of the time too and watching my highlights. So pretty invested in it. And you know, whenever I'm back in my hometown, my whole family still live there. So whenever I'm back, I try to, you know, watch a couple games. So
very nice. So when you go back, I guess this is just a general question and then we'll wrap up. But when you go back, you're going to see some family. But what else would you say you're most excited for? Is there a type of food that you're looking forward to? Is some kind of like sweet candy kind of thing? Beer?
No, it's always beer or a good pint. Good pint again.
Sure.
No, for me, it is going for a really good... So England has some phenomenal curry houses, right? So gorgeous curry, you know, but also like home cooked food. So a Sunday roast would be a big thing for me.
Nice.
You know, I'm gonna now label myself a fish and chips, right? Which is so English,
sure.
Super predictable. So
hey, it's good there.
But those kind of things. Yeah, but those kind of things, you know, and just some of these random candies and different things too, which is cool. You know, I grew up with that. So you know, for me, it's like it is home for me, right? You know, It always will be home. So getting back, you know, my struggle is that I'll go on tour there for a month, but I'll get to see my parents for a day.
Yeah,
you know, that's the battle, right? When I live so far away and don't get to see them too much, that's hard, knowing that you're back for a month, but also don't really get to see them. So I have a lot of friends and family to come out to shows, and throughout the European tour here, I've got people all over Europe flying out and coming out.
Oh, nice.
So pretty excited about that, and good friends in Germany. So
yeah
it should be great.
That's great, James. That's awesome. Well, I had a lot of fun being able to catch up with you and learn more about Kill the Lights and, you know, everything you're doing. Obviously, last time I spoke to Travis and got to learn more about him. So it is great being able to get a chance to speak with you. Like I mentioned before, Death Melodies is coming out on March 8th through Fearless Records. So I am going to have links in the description of the episode so that people can follow you guys on social media so they can pre-order, get that vinyl, get tickets for the European tour, and stay up to date with everything that you guys are doing. But until then, what is the best way for people to support you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is to go out and hit up our Instagrams, our Twitters, and our Facebook, and just kind of, you know, Spotify, you know, kind of go, you know, we obviously have a website too, but just, you know, just look us up on YouTube. We have plenty of videos up there now, and, you know, just live content. And like I said, I think it's just embrace it and dig deep into Kill the Lights and see what you can find. It's a rabbit hole. So,
absolutely.
But no, we, like I say, we appreciate all and any support. And again, you know, our hope is just to get out and meet people, shake hands, and, you know, hopefully have an impact on people's lives, which is why we do it. So,
absolutely. Well, James, once again, thank you so much. Do me a favor, stay on the line, but we'll say our goodbyes right now. So thank you very much for taking the time to do this. And I wish you and Kill the Lights all the best, because this album is really, really great. So I hope it really hits home, is a huge connection point between you and the fans and new fans in general. But once again, man, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.